Welcome back to the Devin Nunes podcast. I know what you're all saying, like, where have you been? What's been going on? Well, now I can actually talk about it. We were in the midst of a merger agreement, the longest IPO, I think, in the history of the United States. Many of you who follow True Social know what we've gone through. But there was a time there as we were out getting the votes for the merger. It was requested that I kind of just stay off the air a little bit. So I abided by that in order to make sure we got the deal done. But let me say thank you to all of the True Social family out there that helped us to get this done. We're so happy that we kind of go from this R&D company with one of the most iconic people in the last 100 years, President Trump, who uses True Social all of the time, and be able to have access finally to the capital markets. And I thank you so much for all of you who stuck with this for so long. We know there's like over 400,000 or more investors now and shareholders. So it's an honor for me to represent you. It's kind of a transition from my old job is in the Congress to then basically doing research and development to develop this product, working to get everything through the capital markets to now being the CEO of a public company. So I know how important it is to the shareholders out there, and I appreciate your support and trust. So one of my favorite people today, we're going to have on Jack Posobiec. I think he goes by Pozo. That's what I usually call him. And Joshua Lysak. They've written a new book. So we're back at it in terms of bringing on True Social folks, people who have been early adopters to True Social. And I just have to say that Pozo, you were not only an early adopter, but you post some of the best stuff. For people who don't know Pozo, he's editor at Human Events, as does multiple podcasts. But I think most importantly, Pozo, what you do is you're a relentless warrior against communism. I've watched you in action. There was nobody better than you that went out there and you take on the left, you get to the truth. And you don't take it on from the perspective of, oh, I'm a conservative, I'm Republican. You actually go head on and say, you know, they're lying. They're not telling the truth. Here's what's really going on. And I know during the whole Russiagate scandal, you were on top of it. And look, you have a great background. I mean, I believe you were Navy intelligence, as I recall. Right. Yeah. And then Josh Lysak, this is our first time meeting, but I appreciate, I know that you're an anti-communist and you guys joined together to write this book called Unhuman. That's going to be out or Unhumans, sorry, going to be out in the summertime. And so maybe we'll have you guys back on when it does come out. But when I saw this book, Pozo, and I knew it was you, and it's a topic that you and I, when I've the times that we have talked, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this. And what caught my attention is that I wrote a book many moons ago where I tied in that, you know, the distinctions, and I have, obviously your book's not out yet, but what I understand is that when you get to communism, socialism, fascism, all those isms, at the end of the day, it's really just a tactic, as I think you guys have pointed yes. out, to gain and hold power. So this, obviously, because you're such a great True Social user, you've got, you know, one of the biggest followings. People love what you post. So welcome to the show, and thanks for all the support that you've given True Social for the last couple of years that we went through this R&D time to now being a true startup.
Well, Devin, God bless, and thanks so much for having us on. Look, the book came out, you know, just, or I should say it became available for pre-order because it actually comes out the 4th of July, and you can get it Amazon, Books A Million has us up now, Barnes & Noble has us up, Bookshop, Skyhorse, our publisher, has us up right there. I'm going to get to the point where I'm just like walking around, you know, throwing it at people at some point, because, you know, I'm sure, well, Joshua is already doing that, by the way, goes around in rural Ohio and just chucks it at people and like cows and stuff. And One of the things that we credit the very early success of the book, so we broke the top 25 of Amazon, and I have to credit Truth Social as being a huge part of that. And so to anybody who's watching, you know, in addition to the important content that's in the book and explaining what we go through, what we are going through, and the fact that other countries have actually, it turns out, gone through things like this in the past. And sometimes they've gone well and they've been corrected and they've been off-ramped, and other times they've gone not so well. And we cover all of it. But just in terms of your basic. So when you put a book together, you need to come up with a marketing plan. You need to come up with a way for people to get attention. You need to come up with a way to get eyeballs on it and get people interested in it. So of course the title, the artwork, you know, very eye catching. Joshua actually designed the title was me. The cover design, I would say, is Joshua. And the when we said we have to find these channels to go out and get the information out there, you know, in our censorious environment that we live today, when it comes to Facebook, when it comes to YouTube, when it comes to some of these things, you know, sure, one of the first things they said to us was, yeah, you got to be careful how you talk about this stuff. You have to be careful about some of the stories you tell, or, you know, some of the platforms you go on. They may not like certain words. They may not like this and that. And I'm scratching my head going, well, wait a minute. You know, you guys, these things will censor you for using a word or a phrase that you don't like. Meanwhile, we're telling historical stories and facts that took place on planet Earth, right? You know, within the last, some of it's within the last 250 years. We do have a little bit where we actually, kind of spoiler alert a little bit, we even go all the way back to the fall of the Roman Republic. For a very quick peek there. And I think people probably can guess why it is that we go there. But the point is, there's nothing in the book that isn't just a hard historical fact. And so I say, why would you ever censor anything like that? And of course, we get the whole spiel. And even for certain shows, not this one, of course, but certain shows that we've gone on have said, well, you know, be careful what you say, be careful how you talk about these things. And it blows my mind. But here we are. And we've been fighting censorship in the social media space now for at least 8 years. And I don't think that social media censorship would have been turned on had President Trump not won in 2016. Because people know that largely this was done because he expertly in 2016 used social media to disintermediate the traditional media and mainstream media. And by doing so and going direct to the people, he was able to build that political coalition that we all saw do what it did in 2016 and most likely is going to do again here in 2024. But of course, I'm the kind of guy who says, you know, you don't want to fight like you're ahead. You want to fight like you're 20 points down at all times. And so that's exactly how I approach every day. But it's what people need to understand that in this situation, and this is something where what Joshua has done is fantastic, and where True Social comes in, it's all entirely intrinsically connected. Because if you do not have the ability to get your message to the people, then you lose. And so that means the true power, and Marshall McLuhan was right about this, the great professor and just pioneering innovator of where media was going. He said the medium is the message. And he said that the real power going forward is distribution and distribution networks. And so setting up and having the ability and going through the trials and tribulations of creating a true distribution network in the environment we live in now, which is horrific for these businesses, to see what True Social has done and taking that challenge on its chin like you have done, I would say right now, this book would not be here if not for True Social.
Well, you're very kind. And we are in such a different world, but I'm glad you brought up the reason that the censorship really came into be in 2016. And I tell this to people all the time, the fake news narrative, or the fake news, people calling the fake news, everybody thinks that was Trump that developed that. Actually, what happened is Trump actually just stole the term fake news. And he stole it. The two prominent people that actually talked about fake news were Mark Zuckerberg and Barack Obama right after the 2016 election. And that's when they got really serious about the censorship, because Pozo, as you said, Trump used social media, just kind of out from underneath them. They had no idea it was happening. I remember watching on Facebook, I couldn't believe the number of people who were watching the Trump rallies live. It was in some cases, I mean, it would be over 100,000 people watching live on Facebook, which was unheard of. That had to be some of the most watched videos ever in the history of Facebook. And then the censorship got really bad. And the socialist and communist tendencies of people really overtook all of the social media empire. And that's what gave rise to Parler, that then got destroyed by Big Tech. It gave rise to Rumble. I mean, I was one of the first to go on. I was the first to go on Rumble. Any people who listen to this show know that when I first went on Rumble, it was myself and funny animal videos that were on Rumble. But I did that because I was being censored. This very podcast was being censored by YouTube. People weren't able to find it. So Josh, thank you also for being on True Social. I know you've written some best-selling books, but maybe walk us through, how did you run into Pozo? Were you walking in DC somewhere and just found him on the street? Or how do you guys know each other? How'd you hook up, and what's it like to write a book with him?
Yes. Thanks for having me on, Devin. I sure appreciate that. And of course, Truth Social is great. The cool thing about the app, at least my favorite, is the superiority of the user interface, like the experience of using the app. Everything is easy to find and it doesn't break, which is more to be said than a lot of other platforms.
Knock on wood, doesn't break.
But this is the first one back, so.
Sure thing. Yes. So Jack and I connected via our let's say mutual overlap of social media shenanigans, rabble rousing and troublemaking in various spheres on the kind of the online decentralized right. I've worked with quite a few of the authors, influencers, and public figures in that space. And a lot of them, let's see if Jack will share this or that sort of thing. Or, hey, Jack, sure, did you see that sort of thing? And then we kind of connected in that way. But where we really came together ideologically and professionally in this case was last December. And prior to that, in prior years, he had done a series of exposés on communist revolutions and drawing parallels to the present moment we find ourselves in. What can the past teach us about the future? Not in terms of it repeating, but of it rhyming. And there was a series of episodes Jack did for Human Events Daily called Chronicles of the Revolution, French Revolution, Russian Revolution, Spanish Civil War, and so on and so forth. And while he was promoting those episodes, I said, in effect, dude, did you see my movie? And he goes, what movie? Rewind the clock a little bit. Several years ago, I was executive producer of a film called Better Left Unsaid. It was an independent documentary that won an award, and it was popular amongst kind of the intellectual academic right and center at the time. And it was asking the question and answering the question, why do we know so much about the far right of the 20th century, and no one ever says anything bad about the far left in popular culture? Mm-hmm. Certain symbols of the right have been outlawed, if you know what I mean, but there's no such issues with the left. In fact, they're on t-shirts, there are bumper stickers, they're cool if you're in college. What's going on with that? And so it was a documentary that exposed the untold facts via interviews, via on-the-ground reporting, you might say, of the secret history of communist revolutions. And that, of course, is what's in the subtitle of Unhumans. And it was that connection late last year. We thought, you know what, we should do something about this. We should connect our mutual expertise and interest in this. Now, I had ghostwritten previously for several Republicans, both elected officials and those who are aspiring, as well as those who've been donors and participants in influence operations, if you know what I mean there, on social media and sharing the
influence operations on social media. I have no idea what you're talking about. I would never do such a thing.
Well, Pozo, you were the leader of that during the Russia hoax. Remember the
I never did that. I will not admit to, I plead the fifth.
You were accused of that, of like working with Putin or somebody. I can't remember what Adam Schiff and Nancy
Pelosi. Right. We were all Russian bots, and it was all the Macedonian, Russian, Georgian, whatever, pick your Eastern European in country. But Joshua, actually, I was going to throw it to you real quick, because one of the things that you did in the book is break this down, how what's different between the communist revolutions of the past and now really is what we're all talking around right now, is the use of technology and the use of media because warfare has changed as technology has changed. And when you mentioned influence operations, I was like, that's key. That's so key to this.
Yes, exactly. The hypothesis that we present in the book and what we argue for is that the best way to understand what's going on in the United States, to kind of get our minds and our hands around it so we can do something about it, rather than following the new outrage of the day and then someone kind of coming along and grifting on top of that to sell their new thing, and then nothing really changes, and then there's a new outrage tomorrow. And meanwhile, the institutional left continues their long march in, as a sort of culture warfare, unfortunately, unopposed in many, many respects, is we've identified that just as warfare has changed and used to be two armies on the battlefield shooting at each other, and now it's irregular combat, there's gray zone warfare where there's plausible deniability. And this, of course, has to do with how China and the United States, Russia and the United States, are at war in many ways, but it's in irregular warfare. It's called gray zone warfare, where there's cyber warfare, there's information warfare, there's even issues in outer space, low Earth orbit, supply chain disruption, fishing rights, all sorts of areas are up for grabs. And there's not really any distinction between civilian and combatant. That's gray zone warfare. And that is exactly what we propose is happening with the current, and this is what we say, the irregular communist revolutionary war that is taking place in the United States at this present moment. It's a series of micro revolutions, micro revolts, these uprisings. Instead of targeting an entire class of people like the clergy, there are specific influential religious figures who are targeted for micro revolution. So instead of it being these sort of drug out mass protests with waving of red flags in the streets, like what happened in Russia or in Spain during the seizure of Spain by communists, it's behind closed doors. It's via lawfare. It's via manipulation of the media. It's through all of these ways and means that do not generate a military response or a police response or even a response from the GOP. And so there's plausible deniability, like with this this great grandmother who's being dragged through it right now for simply praying inside of the Capitol building on January 6th, right? There's plausible deniability, even though it's pretty clear that this is a political prosecution. It's lawfare that's taking place. And so the best way to understand, we argue in this book, is that far left radicals are doing now what they've always done, but they're doing it differently in such a way as to not get caught. And then we expose that, and then we give some tools and some suggestions on what we can do about it.
Well, that was my question. So you're taking a look at history, and then I'm guessing you bring it back to and apply it to what's happening in the United States today. Is that a good way to describe it?
100%. Yes. Prior to every communist revolution, going back to the proto-revolutions in the Roman Republic and then in revolutionary France, there's a period called the operational preparation of the environment. This is another military term that we find applies here. And that's where the enemy does what it takes to get the asymmetric advantage going into the conflict so that they can, quote unquote, win without fighting. And in the case of the United States, this OPE has been occurring since at least the 1960s. But of course, operational preparation of the environment for revolution, it occurred in France, it occurred in China, it occurred in Russia, it occurred in the parts of Africa where there are communist revolutions, it occurred in Southeast Asia, Central and South America. And so these patterns, they are played out, they're repurposed by the same people with the same issue, and that is resentment, that is envy. You have, I don't, so I'm going to take your stuff. That is the entirety of communist ideology. Call it socialism, Marxism, Leninism, Trotskyism.
Oh, you mean like the state of New York is doing to President Trump now?
Yes.
So exactly. What the state of New York is doing, it's multifaceted, because you can actually point out a number of things regarding that. Obviously, what they're doing to President Trump is it's clear, right? Take the politics out of it. You're taking someone who was and continues to be one of the highest profile real estate developers in the entire city, a guy who literally built Manhattan as we currently know it. Okay, literally was part of that in the 70s, in the 80s, when everybody had left Manhattan, when everybody had given up pre-Giuliani. This is the Koch era. You know, a guy who came in and built it up, and they're attempting to take his business away from him. This is, you know, obviously is done because of his politics, but it's also a message that they are not about quote unquote equity and justice and equality and all of these things. No, that, and it, that's all window dressing. That is all just flowery words that they use to try to sway what we call the NPR Americans to their side. You're sort of normie, middle of the road, you think they're middle of the road type people, I should say. When in reality, Letitia James provides us a fantastic example of what they're all about. They're about taking you down. They're about taking you out. They're about tearing down everything that you've built, in many cases, putting it in their own pockets if they're able to, like Fannie Willis apparently was doing down in Georgia. Yeah. And, you know, laundering it through her then boyfriend, although I believe they may have broken up since she had to fire her. And so sad, by the way. So I was just so sorry when I heard about that. I barely could sleep a wink, but thank goodness I have my pillows, so I was good to go. And promo code POSO only, of course. And then we also see Letitia James, though, what she's doing is she's using the power of her attorney generalship to go after conservative organizations like the NRA. She's using it to go after top conservatives like Steve Bannon, who runs the War Room. She's using it to go after immigration sites like VDare and others, and just put them out of business, to just put them out of business with nuisance lawsuits and nuisance investigations, and use the power of her office to do so. Whereas Republicans are terrified of using their power to actually go after anyone who's doing these things. Republicans wouldn't dream. We can barely get anyone to launch an investigation into Antifa or BLM, or, you know, launch, I mean, obvious RICO organizations, but they, you know, they don't seem to be interested, or God forbid, any of these NGOs that are clearly conspiring to interfere in our elections by bringing illegal immigration across, or illegal immigrants across our borders. It's just so obviously a blatant violation of U.S. law, and yet you can't seem to find, present company not included, you can't seem to find Republican lawmakers that are willing to lift a finger. Or if they do, by the way, like you did, to simply go after the Russiagate people, then you're, look, you look what happens. You get the, what we call, and this is a totally other concept, what we call a micro revolution is launched against you. So the revolution doesn't need to be in the streets every day. Now, there are certainly aspects of that, but they can launch what we call micro revolutions that are targeted against a single person, a single organization. And these can be launched and are launched on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a good point. I mean, you bring up the NGOs that are out there, and let's not forget, you know, you can talk all you want about the election fraud and what happened in 2020, but there's nothing more important than the nearly $500 million that Mark Zuckerberg, the owner of Facebook, laundered through these different organizations in order to influence the election. I mean, that alone, $500 million, or it was 430 and some change or something, that's real money. And that's real money in politics, believe it or not. And that's, you know, none of that has ever been, you know, from my, you know, I guarantee you, if a Republican had done that, I give this example a lot, but if Sheldon Adelson had put even $1 million into an NGO in, say, one of the counties in Pennsylvania, he would have been fully investigated by the, you know, from DOJ, they'd be calling for investigations, et cetera, et cetera. We're talking to Jack Posobiec, also goes by Pozo. If you follow him on Truth Social, you know that he's a big supporter of MyPillow. One of the support, not only that, I think MyPillow has kept Pozo and his family operating. But Jack, I actually get a kick out of how you and your wife, like, you're very creative in how you.
I don't know what you're talking about right now, because Tanya does not have a promo code. Actually, she used to have a promo code. It's very sad. But they were looking at the numbers, and the number, there were no numbers because it was failing, and it was just not, you know, not pulling its weight. So, I think I heard they discontinued promo code, that other promo code that's out there for Herb, because it was, you know, and the pillows were coming out lumpy and the delivery was bad. So I don't think there is another promo code, as a matter of fact, that she has at all. In any case,
I'm going to leave that between you and your wife. I'm not going to get in the middle of that, but it is a lot of fun to watch you that play out on True Social. And we're talking to Joshua Lysak, who co-authored the book Unhumans with Pozo. I want to talk a little bit about something that I've noticed that's happening in the last few years. And I just want to get your take on how you guys see the future of this working, because these tactics that you're describing that are in your upcoming book, Unhumans, they're having a real effect in real life as you watch people leave these blue states. It was sped up by COVID and flee to the red states. Mm-hmm. And unlike in the previous, you know, I'm, you know, not a super old guy, but now I'm a old enough guy to remember, you know, the downturn in the early 90s, where, you know, real estate went down. There was, you know, actually led to the first George Bush losing his election to Bill Clinton, and the rise of Perot, Ross Perot, and all of that, which shocked everybody that in 92, Bill Clinton became president. But it was really the economic downturn that affected the whole entire country. Then fast forward to the 2000, I was very involved in it, the 2008 recession that really was, I think probably you guys remember that also, and everybody suffered, you know, every state in the union. But what's different now is that there's something that I think is, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm from anecdotal evidence here, you see that California is a disaster zone. It's got a, you know, everybody says, oh, Gavin Newsom's going to run for president. Look, I don't think they're going to pick him, because, you know, he's got a probably what is a $100 billion budget deficit with no way to fix it, because you have an invasion at the border with more people coming across. They're attracting every homeless person in California, and any Republican who can get out is getting out, and they're moving to red states. Same is true in New York City. Same is true in Chicago. But what you see is, for the first time, at least in my lifetime, and we'll see if it continues this way as the economy continues to struggle, you have the red states that aren't having this problem. They actually have budget surpluses still. And I don't think we've ever seen that in kind of modern, at least in my lifetime. So, Pozo, I'd like to get kind of your thoughts on this new trend that's I think is unusual.
Well, certainly. So what we see, and you can go and look at Zoomers, you know, posting videos. If you go on TikTok, or sometimes I'll be scrolling through social, and usually I get my TikTok through Truth, actually. So I'll be scrolling, and someone has kind of like ported it over. But I saw one just the other day of this kid, and I'll put it this way. You can kind of usually tell a person's politics by the way they look these days, you know, whether someone's like well-groomed, or, you know, whether they've got like multiple facial piercings or, you know, or something. And I'll just say this guy. The face mask. Right. Exactly. Dead giveaway there. I love them from that perspective, because, it, you know, it's like an early warning detection system. And I'll just say though that this kid, you know, looks like he was in his 20s, Zoomer, but he certainly didn't code conservative or code, you know, Republican or anything like that. You know, he came across like you'd think you'd be a liberal. But what was interesting, and he was on this TikTok video, and he was talking about how it's so hard for him to afford life in 2024 America. And he was saying, look, I work my butt off. And I work all these shifts, and I go back, and I can't find anything. I can't find an apartment to rent that isn't, you know, that's anywhere in my price range. It's $1,800 for like a tiny little cube apartment these days. And he was like, I have to live with somebody. And we have a whole generation of people there And people look at the demographics politically when you talk about the polls, and you, and we're starting to now see for the first time ever, we had Rich Barris, the People's Pundit, the great People's Pundit, on the show the other day on Human Events, which I do every day at 2. And he said, we're starting to see polls where it looks like President Trump isn't just trending with under 35s, that they're going, he said, the trend lines I view is that by this summer, if it continues, if it holds, you might even see President Trump ahead with the 35 and under, which is unheard of, which is just politically unheard of, certainly for a Republican, and definitely unheard of for Donald Trump. You would never have seen this in 2016. You wouldn't have even seen this in 2020. We've never seen numbers like that. But it's also, I think, to your point, because we've never seen an economic situation like this. Mm-hmm. And typically, look, bad economies are going to be suffered by whoever the incumbent is. That isn't necessarily a political thing, but it's always going to be blamed on the guy who's there now. So it's not like a conservative Democrat, liberal Republican, whatever kind of thing. It's just you, whoever's there is going to get punished. And that's what Biden is running into. This kid was saying, you know, I can't afford to live. I can't afford groceries. And I think everyone's feeling that. And even, you know, my wife, she calls it airport prices, because she'll say, you go everywhere and it feels like it's you're paying airport prices. Like, everybody knows when you travel, the airports are super expensive because, you know, you're stuck. They've all got, you know, their little mini monopolies. But now it's you leave and the prices stick with you from the airport, you know, throughout everywhere, that they're at the gas station, they're at the grocery store, they're at Costco, where they're wherever they are, wherever you go. And they're inescapable because wages haven't raised. And even Ron Klain, the original chief of staff to Joe Biden, who's a longtime Joe Biden aide before Jeff Zients, came in the White House as chief of staff, the original chief of staff, he came out there and saying, look, the administration really needs to get their communications game back on track, because they keep talking about inflation being down and all of the others say, oh, the indicators are good, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what people are feeling, because prices are still up, just because they're not rising as much as basic economics, like really basic economics, folks. I'm not an economist, right? That if just because the rate of increase is down, that does not mean prices are decreasing. That means they're just as high as they were. And also it means that if your wages aren't increasing, then you're still feeling the pain every single time you go to make a purchase. That's just really basic. And it was the only under President Trump prior to COVID, which, you know, and people can debate whether or not COVID was just an accident in that lab. Prior to that, that was the first time that working class Americans saw an actual real wage increase in a generation in this country.
Well, first of all, generation. The lab, remember what we were told first, though, that it was just naturally occurring. That was
from the bat soup. Remember the bat soup?
That was the
first story. They said it was bat soup from the wet market. And I've been to China. I lived in China for 2 years. There's like China stuff in the book that I talk about, like being at the, you know, where they set up the Chinese. I've been to the building where they founded the Chinese Communist Party in Shanghai.
So we've always known that you're a,
I know about the wet market.
We've always known you're a secret Russian agent. I did not know that if this news is going to get out.
Really amazing. I'm pulling down so many income streams. You have no idea. That's why I fly. I'm like, I fly in airplanes more than Taylor Swift. I fly an airplane to go to Wawa. All right. I'm coming downstairs in a helicopter. All right. That's how much income I'm making from all of my foreign payments. Okay.
Right. When in the reality, we're only halfway joking, but they, you know, you are an anti-communist. I know for a fact. I mean, you're big supporter of Eastern Europe and what the Poles and the Romanians and all of these guys.
Yes.
Struggled through.
Talk to any, like, and you know, we talk about this as well in the book a little, right? I wouldn't say that we talk about it, but it's certainly what informed the book, is the fact that, you know, I've got family that lived through communist Poland, and my wife, of course, was born in the Soviet Union. And I don't use that as a credential or something. I just mean to say that I've talked to her and I've talked to her family, and I've heard about these stories of the complete insanity, sheer insanity they had to live through. And with her, these stories that she tells, now she was born at the tail end of it. Obviously, we focus in the book more at the beginning on how this was, you know, sold, right? You know, because the marketing is always great. Oh, it's going to be utopia. It's equity. We're going to be social justice. It's one of the words they always use. It's not a new word. That's an old word that they've been using for a long time. Social justice. Mm-hmm. And what my wife, what Tanya lived through, was more the collapse of all that. and she lived through the collapse of her government. And that's a scary time as well. And in the book, Joshua actually broke down the ways to defeat communism. And one of those is sort of the way to get out strategy and wait for them to eat themselves. The problem is when you're living large off of the Russian treasury, the imperial treasury, that you've got quite a bit of money to keep going. And when all of that comes to grinding to a halt, which it always eventually will, so imagine living in a country, and we're starting to see it, by the way, where now in their case, they ran out of money to pay the police. So now if the police aren't getting paid, nobody's showing up for work. So what do you think happens in these cities when suddenly everyone gets told and the criminals find out there's no police that are patrolling anymore? Nobody's going to lock you up. Even if you get arrested, you're going to be let back out. Now, what's interesting for the United States is that we've kind of like chosen that path, as opposed to, we have plenty of money, but we're not giving it to them. We're giving it to people to come across the border. And this is why what Joshua and I lay out in the book is the things that we're seeing right now, the shock therapy that's going on to our country, Devin, it's not being done by accident. It's actually being done intentionally, and that all of this is part of an agenda to overload our system, to make people feel desperate, so desperate that they will go in for these extreme solutions that the farthest of the far left are offering.
Yeah. And so, Josh, I want to get your take also on this movement, from the blue states to the red states. And if you see this as a new trend, or even a planned trend, and it may be something actually, Pozo, that the left was not expecting with their grandmaster plan.
Yeah, I don't know if they expected people to leave. I know they expect people to feel pain. I mean, look at the landlords, right? Just to add in there, I mean, that they always go after the landlords. If you're you're lucky that they're not doing what they did to the landlords in Mao's China or in Lenin's Russia. You are lucky that the landlords are not being treated that. You're lucky that all that's happening right now is that you're being arrested by these people, because they have a certain history when it comes to the landlords.
Yeah, what I want to get Josh's take on this, but Jerry Brown, former governor of California, very left wing, one of the most liberal politicians in the last 50 years, he was very arrogant and cocky about the policies that were being passed in California when many of us were saying, this is a bad deal, people are going to leave. And he would just brush it off and say, they're going to pay the weather tax. They're just going to pay the weather tax. Well, Jerry Brown, if you can believe it or not, looks like Ronald Reagan compared to the legislature now in California and Gavin Newsom. And they took the Jerry Brown policies that were already driving the state down, and they just hit the accelerator, poured gas on the fire. And you're seeing, this flee happen even faster, and why California is in what is described actually by some honest left-wingers, liberal organizations, that I think it was the Financial Times that wrote a story calling San Francisco was in a doom loop, meaning that basically there's no way that they can get out of this tailspin that they're in. That wasn't done by Jack Posobiec or me. It was done by the Financial Times. So, Josh, what say you on this trend to the from blue to the red states, and how does how does this end? Because I think it may not end well as people flee to red states.
Yes, prior to and also during communist revolutions in the past, where they were open revolts in the streets and there were actual overthrowing of governments, not these sort of pseudo insurrections, if you know what I mean, but actual rounding up of government officials and mass executions, there were, of course, mass exodus from those countries. There was famously Peter Wrangel with the White Army stationed in Crimea and then escaping with all Russians who were loyal to, at that time, unfortunately, the assassinated Tsar and his family. And it was Russia, effectively Russia in exile, moving into Western Europe, into North America, and to beyond, to find freedom, because they could not find it where they were anymore. We see this also in Southern Africa when people have suffered under communism there, Central and South America as well, Southeast Asia, obviously, same as in Spain, China, and beyond. It was, of course, the Republic of China that has occupied the island of Taiwan because there was nowhere else to go. They had to flee for their own personal safety. And those who either wouldn't or couldn't leave have had to stay behind and be subjugated. And it seems we see that pattern again in an irregular gray zone revolutionary warfare context where there's not necessarily total open hostility towards all landlords, let's say. But if you are a landlord of means, if you are a landowner in these left occupied areas, you are going to be punished, penalized, and otherwise prohibited from exercising rights that you would have in freer areas. And so that is exactly what we would expect to see, this exodus from far left areas, be they states, be they cities, into freer areas where there's actual rights to life, liberty, and property that are maintained. And that gets to why we titled this book what we titled it. It's called Unhumans, because unhuman is both a noun and it's a verb. To unhuman someone is to make them be deprived of their human rights. And this is what communists always do. And it's uniquely communists who do this every single time. There have been other factions and other regimes who, of course, have committed atrocities. But the far left is unique in their decisiveness in doing this every single time across time, space, and race. Whenever communists or far leftists, socialists, Marxists, Jacobins, revolutionaries, whatever you want to call them, every time they rise up, they follow the same playbook. It just so happens that we're finally exposing all of the plays and giving some counter moves to them. But again, they unhuman their victims, those they deem the oppressors. And in America, via the cultural Marxist rather than socioeconomic frame, those deemed the oppressors are white, straight, Christian, Republican, successful people, landowners, landlords, business owners, small business people, investors, police officers, even gray collar workers like plumbers and electricians. It's veterans, all of the gun owners, all of those people are considered oppressors in the cultural Marxist worldview, because it used to be in classical Marxism, there were the haves and have nots. There were the workers, and then there was the people who owned the factories. But that's been distributed across various identity groups and subcultures here in our gray zone revolutionary war here in the United States that we're currently experiencing.
So, Josh, tell us where you can. So you can get the book everywhere, and it comes out July 4th. And where can they follow you at on True Social? You're on True Social, right? And I apologize because I don't think I follow you, which I feel horrible about.
No worries. Yes. On True Social at Joshua Lysak.
Right. And Pozo, you've been very gracious with your time. Obviously, people can follow you at Human Events on True Social and also watch your it's daily show, right? That comes on the Human Events. And then you also have the Rumble show that you do with
Charlie. Yeah. So we do the daily show is every day, 2 p.m. Then on Thursday evenings, we do a show that's Rumble only. So you can embed that here and watch it at Truth called Thought Crime. And of course, Charlie and I always get in a lot of trouble for the stuff we say on that show. And so that's Charlie, myself, and a couple of the guys from Turning Point Action. And we have a lot of fun.
Imagine that. And I want to on the way out, I want to get one more thought from you, Pozo, because you mentioned Rich Barris, who has been on this show. I've been on his show, and you know, kind of switch gears here to just the presidential politics. But you did bring up the polling, and kind of final thought from you on, you know, you see these numbers that have moved. Unquestionably, they've moved with every demographic that's out there. That Trump is now doing better, and one of the things I want to ask Rich when I get him back on the show is, well, how is it that Biden and Trump are still close in some of these states? Because if he's moved up in all these demographics, like, who has Trump actually lost? Like, I don't think he's lost anybody from 2016 and 2020, where he got 75 million votes. And so now that you've switched this, how is this election even close? What do you think the trends are? What do you think? You know, we're going to obviously watch a lot of fake news, whether or not Biden is ultimately going to be their nominee, I think is still a bridge that has to be crossed. But looks to me like just recently they're somehow like these polls are keeping Biden alive. And I just don't know how it's possible.
So, I mean, there's two things, right? So polling wise, I'll say this, you always have to fight like you're 20 points down, always. And even though, look, Trump's riding high right now, that's great. RFK, Jill Stein, Cornel West, they seem to be working together and essentially to create a block that chips away against Biden. But at the same time, we know, of course, there's a lot that's going on. Like, it's only April. We're so early into this year. They've got plenty of time to throw all that in the kitchen sink at Trump. Obviously, he consolidated the field very quickly, won the primary very quickly. But then I think even after winning the primary so quickly, he also did a great job of consolidating the party and bringing people together under one tent, which I remember just a couple of weeks ago here, people were saying, oh, he'll never do this. He'll never be able to bring people back on board. He's done it. He actually has done it at this point. And I think pretty much everyone is on board with the president at this point, at least in the party. Now, that being said, President Biden has a lot of time to course correct here. He has a lot of time. Obviously, people are very, I would say, very negative on his conduct of the, foreign relations, whether it be Ukraine, whether it be the Israel-Gaza crisis. And of course, that's intrinsically tied, as we said earlier, to the economic situation, because people wake up every day and they say, I'm having trouble paying for basic goods. And then they turn on the TV and they find that, another 100 billion, another 50 billion, whatever it is being sent to some other country. And suddenly there's this huge disconnect between what my government is supposed to be doing and my day-to-day experiences. That's what creates that friction. And of course, President Trump is going and is currently the beneficiary of this situation, because simply put, it was not like that under his presidency. We have an A-B test here in a way that we haven't had really it's unprecedented in modern American politics, because people can remember what it was like when Trump was in office, and they can remember it was better and things weren't blowing up all over the world, unless it was him taking out some terrorists and turning him into Pico de Gallo. And they can remember that they were making more money and we were all getting rich again. And they also understand that Biden is not what they were promised. And it's as simple as that. Even Dwayne Johnson, like The Rock, who's no conservative, but even he came out and publicly said that he regrets endorsing Biden, which is a huge spin. Now, I'm not sure if he's going to go in the RFK camp or just stay out of politics, but it's really a big move and a big indicator when you see a guy with a platform like that, who is one of your just A-list celebrities and probably biggest draws in terms of Hollywood, coming out and saying they regret endorsing the current president of the United States. Huge sea change type situation. So even with all that, I still have to say, it's like to say, we got a lot of football left between now and the election. Can they course correct? They can. They actually can. I would argue, if I was advising Joe Biden right now and I were a Democrat and wanted him to win, the very first thing I would do is tell him to pardon this praying grandma over there at the Capitol, saying, guys, they're going to use this to destroy you with moderates if you continue on this course of action, because the things that you're doing seem absolutely lunatic to the people that who are middle of the road. Joshua calls them the NPR Americans. And, it's, you're only going to go so far with this. So if you guys course correct, if you start to seek some peace deals, if they can get something, if they can get the hostages out of Gaza and then wrap that up over there, if they can do something to achieve a peace deal with Ukraine, there's a lot of ways for that Biden could get out of this. The question is, does he actually, or anything with gas? I mean, my goodness, he could with a flip of a switch, he could allow drilling and fracking and all of these things back in the U.S. The issue for him, it's not a question, and this of course is the thesis of our book as well. The issue for him is that he is pursuing the agenda, or I should say, his party is pursuing an agenda that they want of requiring America to decline, so that their far left agenda can then be used to do come in and usurp it. And so for Biden to start moderating on any of these issues would be to turn off that agenda. So that's really the big issue there. And then, of course, you know, of course, there is a real question with the lawfare, though I would say the lawfare at this point, and I think everyone sort of agrees, the lawfare is completely backfired, utterly backfired. And I remember, I'm not going to name names, but I remember when all the Republican consultants in DC, and Devin, I'm sure you heard a lot of the same people saying, oh, the cases are the end of Trump. That's why we all got to get behind somebody else in the primary, whether it's DeSantis, whether it's Nikki, whether it's Christie. We got to do something because these cases are going to take him down. And I remember looking at them and saying, I don't think you guys are looking at this right at all, because you're totally misreading human nature here, because people are going to see these cases are ridiculous, and they are. And they are not going to stand for this. And in fact, you are going to get normal people, people who are like not, you know, engaged in the political process every day. They're not, you know, following Devin Nunes. They're not, you know, following Jack Posobiec and reading Joshua Lysak books, et cetera. It's you're going to get start activating those people because of what you're doing. And we talk about this in Unhuman so much. It's Newtonian. It is a law of the cosmos. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And it feels to me like the Democrats haven't quite figured that out yet.
Well, Jack and Josh, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for all of you who have supported True Social through this time that we finally become a true startup company, like I said. And Pozo, I have a surprise for you. You may not know this, but you are now the third famous musician that has been on the Devin Nunes podcast, because we're going to play.
I play a little bass, but I don't know. What do you mean famous musician? What do you mean?
We're going to play your new song.
New song. Oh, no, wait. They didn't send you that. No, yeah. Because that was, oh no. He's going to do it.
We've had John Rich.
Right.
John Rich a few times, launched a couple songs on True Social. Aaron Lewis. And now
Aaron Lewis, by the way, Aaron Lewis.
Yep. So anyway, thank you, everybody. Devin Nunes, will catch you hopefully next week again. But until then, we will play the new famous musician, rock star, Jack Posobiec's new song, and go out and get their book, Unhumans.
Unhumans.
On the porch, twanging on the guitar, got the breeze blowing through my hair, ain't got no worries so far, but I got a hankering, yearning deep inside, for this book called Unhumans I just can't hide. Tells a story of secrets and a mystery, the hidden tales of the communist history. I wanna know the truth, what really went down, so I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-ordering Unhumans. Can't wait to get my hands on that book. Gonna dive into its pages. Take a closer look from the Russian Revolution to the Play Race game. This book's gonna take me there, I swear. This book's gonna take you there, I swear.